Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Dr. Marty Gentius, and this week, Jacqueline Stanton speaks with me about how counselors can assist acquired spinal cord injury patients in their re-entry into the school system. Welcome to Counselor Audio Source. I'm Dr. Marty Gentius from Kent State University. And with me today is Jacqueline Stanton. Jackie.
Sounds great.
And Jackie is a doctoral student here at Kent State University, about to complete and defend her dissertation. And her area of interest and expertise is acquired spinal cord injury and what counselors have to know about that. Jackie, can you give a little broader of an introduction, maybe a little bit about your experience and your work?
Sure. I work at a place called Metro Health Medical Center, which is located in Cleveland, Ohio, and I work as a rehabilitation counselor there. I've been there, I've lost track of time, somewhere between 16 and 17 years. We kind of don't keep track after so many years. But it's a wonderful place to work. And how I got interested in rehabilitation, actually, was sort of a back door. I was at Ohio University in the community counseling program, and had an advisor or class with a gentleman named Dr. Joseph Turpin, who was actually a person in rehabilitation, and he said, you need to get into rehab, and kind of gave me some ideas and direction and guidance. And that summer I went to Metro Health and, you know, did a little work there volunteering, and he was right. I knew right away when I got there that it was the place I needed to be. And so graduated from that program and then started working at Metro soon after that, and started working with people with spinal cord injury probably, I think it was 3 years into my time at Metro Health. And our department's a little department called Vocational Services, which is located within the larger physical medicine and rehabilitation program. So, and always liked working on the spinal cord injury unit. I really enjoyed it. And how I got into this particular interest area was I could remember in a team conference, you know, a lot of the approach in rehab is team, and so there's the physician and the PT and OT, and the doctor looked at me and he says, well, this person's a high school student, you're going to help him get back to school, right? And I said, yeah, I guess. And so
you got thrown into the job in that case.
Exactly.
So just a sort of a broad statement before we get into some of your research that you've done, and what kinds of things should counselors be aware of? How do counselors intermingle with spinal cord injury patients?
Okay. I think what is important to me, or was noticeable to me in the beginning, is it's a sudden and huge change for a person. And so you meet somebody who, if their injury is acquired, they were one way at one point and then had this injury, and their life kind of took a sudden change. And so just being aware of, you don't know when they had their injury. You don't know, you know, how long they've been in the chair. You don't know what they're able to do, because everybody has a little bit of different ability. And I think just getting to know them as a person first and foremost. And then it was interesting, because one of the, I'm kind of sidetracking at the study, one of the kids in the study said, people didn't realize that I was able-bodied before, and so people didn't, you know, people always thought I was in this wheelchair.
So people's perceptions of this patient was that it changed that patient's whole history, her whole past.
Correct. Yeah, his peers in college, well, I interviewed him in college, thought that he had always been in the wheelchair.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he said, you know, so it's kind of good. He goes, I can use that to my advantage to understand people better. So
what's spinal cord injury, and how does it affect an individual's function?
Okay.
Just to get some basics for our listeners.
Okay, and I call this the counselor's definition. Not the medical. Basically, what a spinal cord injury is if you can think about the structure of the of your spinal column, the vertebrae are stacked one on top of the other, and inside is the spinal cord. Okay, the bones are hollow. So when a person has an injury, a sudden injury, it could be from a motor vehicle crash or a fall or whatnot. If what happens oftentimes is there's a fracture to the vertebra around the cord, and then that cord becomes bruised from the vertebra being out of alignment or pushed out of place. And so really what the spinal cord injury is then is it's a bruising in many cases of the cord and a change in what you'll see in either feeling below the level of injury or in motor ability. Mm-hmm. And it can be very different. It can be drastically different. I mean, some people have a complete injury where they don't feel or have no muscle control below the level of injury, or they can have a little bit of feeling and not any motor, or vice versa. So you see a little bit different in every single picture, I guess. So that's the counselor's definition.
But when you describe it as a bruising, it's sort of like I get a bruise on my leg and it goes away.
Correct.
But I'm not trying to be naive here, but I suspect that the bruising can vary in range and the severity of it. It also impacts the loss of ability.
Absolutely. Very, very good point. And you could see, depending on how the fracture, depending on the type of fracture, like how the bones misalign, I mean, you might have a person who has more function on one side or the other. It's pretty diverse. I mean, I think in the study that I did here, we talked about trying to have a homogeneous sample, but in reality, everybody had a little bit of different ability and function. So.
Mm-hmm. And it's also where on the spinal cord the injury occurs in terms of how high up the spine.
Correct.
Occurs, you get different types of results.
Correct. Yeah. For example, someone who has a fracture, say, in the cervical region, which is sort of the neck region, mm-hmm. they're going to have some differences in their hand function as well as their trunk muscles and then their legs too, whereas someone with a T thoracic level injury may have normal upper body function and then just affected lower limbs.
Okay. So the patients that you worked with, what kinds of acquired, how did they acquire the injuries?
Motor vehicle crashes, common, is probably the largest. Falls, sports injuries. Those are the main ones. Okay.
And to get a little bit more closer to your study, overall, what were you looking for? What was the basis of your study? What were you trying to find out?
That's a great question. Because when I very first started Metro Health, I just remember sitting in a meeting with a young man who was kind of going through this process, finished his rehab, getting back into his high school. And I thought, man, it must be really uncomfortable to be in your spot right now. I mean, I was in this meeting and I thought, oh, man, I wouldn't want to be in your spot. And I thought, gosh, is he embarrassed? I mean, that would be awkward. You know, you're trying to get back into this environment that you knew as a person with who was able-bodied, and now there's a whole different sort of your persona, role, whatever you want to call it. So to get at your question, I think I just really wanted to know if I was that student. If I was in that person's spot right at that moment, what was it like? And then how did that change over time? Did it get better? Did it get easier? Was it more challenging? What were you thinking? What were you feeling? That's exactly kind of what I was driving after. Does that help?
Yeah. But how did you get your participants? What were you looking for in a participant to try and get that story, to get that understanding?
In the cases of the folks I interviewed here, I had worked with them over the years at the hospital, so I had known them. They had had their rehabilitation at MetroHealth, and I was the person working with them in terms of school reintegration. So, even though I was muddling along, if you will, because I was trying to learn as I went, I was able to be with them, kind of help them think about, okay, well, what do you need to think about? What do you need to be ready for? What is on your mind? What questions do you have? So really it was anyone I could think of that I had worked with over the years that I sort of invited to participate in the study.
Yeah. And so to be more specific, your participants were folks who had successfully navigated getting back in the school environment?
Yes, that's a good question. That's a good point. These were all individuals who, and as I found, kind of elected to go back to school. As a student, you can kind of work the system if you want.
Yeah.
These are all people who sort of made a conscious decision. Yeah, I'm on home instruction I'm in the rehab center or the hospital, what have you, but I do want to resume my regular academic curriculum. Some people can choose to stay on that home instruction or kind of stay out, if you will. But these are all people who decided, yes, this is what I want to do. There's no question in my mind. And so they resume school in the study it said at least 3 months post-rehabilitation. And in most cases it was at the minimum like a semester based on age. You know, some people were just already seniors. So they, once they were there, they stayed, which was good.
You know, as you tell that, it reminds me, Dr. Betsy Page is also co-director on this dissertation. It was something that she and I found real exciting about this idea that you're going to be looking at this population of students who had chosen to return to or attempt to return to a mainstream sort of educational system.
Right.
And what were the qualities that those students had that gave them the resilience to be able to do that?
That's a great question. I mean, I'll be honest, this is a little bit of investigator bias, because I remember thinking part of the reason why I wanted to do this study was it always seemed to me that when I would talk with these students, it was like there was no question in their mind they were going to do it.
Hmm.
Does that make sense? You know, like going into it, it was like, no, this is what I'm going to do, and it's going to happen. So
they had a certain determination about themselves in terms of this is what's going to, this is how my...
Yeah, absolutely. Like, this is the plan, and this is sort of what... Mm-hmm. And, of course, the rehab team, as I think anyone in the helping profession would want to encourage, that's normally your role as a teenager. You're normally at high school, you know, mm-hmm. So that's what we try to encourage. But at the same time, there was this innate idea, in the sense that these students had, you know, there's no question, this is what I plan to do.
So talk a little bit more about your research design. What did you actually do with them?
It was basically a qualitative design. It's kind of a multiple case study design. And what I did is interview the students who were, this is several years post, so they've all completed high school, are now in college or finished college. So their mid-20s was the average age range. Mm-hmm. So I interviewed the students and asked them a little bit about, you know, what was it like? You know, what? Tell me a little bit about your injury. Tell me a little bit about your school. You know, what was it like the first couple weeks you were back? You know, what was good? What could have been better? Those were some of the questions that we asked. And then did a couple follow-up interviews, too, with a few of the students, which really elicited more about how important that school reintegration was for them in terms of not really then, but now, in their life now, as a person who's like either in college or post-college. And then the other thing that really, well, part of the design was to also interview a family member that, or a friend that the person chose. So the participant told, you know, I said, who would you like me to interview who knows a little bit about your experience during high school? And so they would identify the person. And, 7 out of the 8 people identified a parent or a family member, which I thought was really interesting.
Huh, yeah.
You know, so that, and the family member or the friend interviews were equally as interesting as the participant interviews. And it really made me realize how involved the families were in this person's sort of success. Mm-hmm. Without a lot of fanfare or question or this is what we're going to do. It's a team effort kind of thing. You know, whatever you need, we'll make it work.
So how did you analyze? I mean, you got these interviews, and I presume you got transcripts and such from not only the patients with acquired spinal cord injury, but also from a family member or relative, significant other who was involved in their reintegration back into school. What'd you do with the data?
Well, that's great. Good question. Well, I did use QSR. N6 is a computer software program to analyze the data. But I also found myself sitting with piles of interviews just going, I'm going to need to color code these first. So so I got, you know, my smelly magic markers, and I'm sitting there at the table, and, you know, yeah. So I had, not only did I use the computer software program, which was really helpful, but I found it was more important to also use some other method just mm-hmm. to sort of corroborate, if you will. And it also got me thinking, you know, in terms of, oh, wow, this is important. So so I would use the color coding system, then the computer, then I go back to the color coding system, make sure that, you know, and then I'd put the color coding system in the computer. And
You know, and also I want to acknowledge Dr. Connie McReynolds, who is an outside member, who shared with me the story of her sitting with you in a room with the concepts and helping you work through and seeing you work through sort of the meta-analysis of all the separate little concepts and how they fit together. And she's in rehabilitation, she's a professor in rehabilitation counseling, so she was, you know, she also knew that field well enough to be able to assist you with that. And so it was a sort of multi-layered data analysis.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up, because that was at a point where, I don't know if other researchers experience this, but I, you know, it's where you, a point where you go, oh my goodness, where am I going with all this? And so we just sort of tore the whole tree structure apart, said, all right, these are all the categories, lay them all out. And, and she really was really effective in helping me sort of restructure and see those themes. So
tell me a little bit about your findings. What did you find out?
I was kind of pleasantly surprised, actually, what we found. The category, there's basically four themes that kind of fell into nine categories. Very consistent with a previous research study that was done at Shriners Hospital in Philadelphia by a gal named M.J. Mulcahy. And I didn't expect that at all, but it seemed like it was very similar. The only differences probably were in the fact that her study was, like, these students were still in high school when she interviewed her students, and the group of folks that I interviewed were retrospective, you know, they were later in life. So it kind of made sense, some of the comments that were made in this study versus MJ's study. So what we came up with was four major themes, and I kind of arranged it sort of in a pie, because they all really connect. They're interconnected, if you will. Relationships is theme one, and that would be relationships with people who helped, and the support that the person received. And that could be, you know, mom, dad, brother, sister, counselor, principal. It really didn't matter. And then also informal support actually seemed to be a real important piece for these students, you know, someone they could just count on for whatever they needed. Theme two was more kind of I called it a redefinition of self, and it was more of like, okay, here's where I am, I'm at today. You know, I'm not the soccer player or the football player anymore, but I'm a good student, you know, and it certainly helps me to feel better about who I am to be a good student and be here. So sort of this process of, you know, I'm in rehabilitation, finish up with that, get back into the school, find out what your niche is, and then sort of think about, okay, now where do I go from here? And that was career.
Mm-hmm. So relationships and redefinition of self.
Right.
Two concepts.
Right. And then the third theme was, because what I kind of referred to as the affective component, they were more of like, the feelings that were associated with the whole process and how people coped, which was pretty amazing. You know, things like, I just knew I had to do it. You know, just get back in there and do it. So that's the theme three, is the affective component and just the process of, you know, what the students were feeling through the whole process of rehab, reintegration. And then in the future, like I said, we had some folks talk a lot about how they see themselves down the road with their career. So, and then the final theme four, I called it resilience, because the two categories were making it work. Mm-hmm. And what was the last one? Making it work and self-determination.
Okay, making it work and self-determination as part of their resilience.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and making it work kind of encompassed things like, okay, the bathroom is not accessible. What's plan B? Okay, we'll go to the locker room, the men's locker room. That works. Okay. So it was like there were obstacles and barriers, certainly, but participants didn't really feel like they were insurmountable. Does that make sense? They were like, well, that didn't work, so what else can we do? And
okay.
So there always was a way, they always seemed to look around the obstacles. Mm-hmm. And then there was like this desire that, yeah, I'm going to do it. this is just how it has to be, and I have larger plans. I want to see what comes next. Mm-hmm. So.
All right. Any surprises for you out of the study? I mean, maybe not directly related to the those four concepts, but anything that surprised you the most about it?
I think what surprised me is I went into the study thinking that people were going to bitch and moan and complain. The school wasn't accessible. The bathroom sucked. You know, I couldn't get in the restroom. And it was quite the contrary. Certainly there were these barriers, you know, mainly architectural barriers. Some, you know, people not knowing, people, you know, a little bit of discomfort with people not understanding spinal cord injury. But largely the feeling was it was a good experience. You had to do it. Number one, we could, you know, the rehab group, the staff, if you will, couldn't have said, this is what you're going to experience. You just had to go in there and do it. Mm-hmm. But overall, people were very positive about what they experienced.
Okay.
So
the surprise of maybe thinking you'd expect getting lots of complaints from the people you're interviewing, but
right.
instead getting a positiveness about approaching these problems.
Absolutely.
Anything else? Any other stories or things that stick out for you in terms of surprises or things you might have done differently in the process?
I'm really glad I interviewed family members.
Huh.
That to me was a really wealth of information. Sometimes the students would kind of tell you something, it would sort of scratch the surface, and then mom would come along and say, well, yeah, that was, we dealt with that, you know. But it was more of them also sharing their story and again, emphasizing how important that school reintegration sort of meant return to normal.
Uh-huh.
For their not only for the student but for the whole family.
So that they saw that as a goal line achievement for the family that my son or daughter has been able to return to normal.
Absolutely.
By being able to go to school and return to school.
Right, and it also brought and I can distinctly remember a mom saying this. It brought like a sense of normalcy to the whole family, which I didn't ever think about. Honestly, yeah, I didn't think about that.
Is there, I may be pushing it beyond what you got in terms of data from the family, but I wonder if this has brought up thoughts about the process the family goes through.
Oh, without question. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Okay.
Because there was a lot of emotion from the family members, more so from than there was from the participants, quite honestly, in the course of the interview dialogue. And I thought, my goodness, yeah, this is... Mind you, these are like 4, 5, 6, 7 years later.
Uh-huh.
So, absolutely, I
but
think.
But they still remember they connect with the affect from that period of time that they were struggling.
Absolutely.
With supporting their loved one through this.
Absolutely, it's almost like it was it was like yesterday.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So that was really amazing. Another thing that I would have liked to have done is interview the school counselors.
Yeah.
Because I think about when I am faced with someone I've never, like a population or person I've never worked with before, you know, it's a little, you're like, okay, well, I'm not sure what to say or do, you know, I don't want to offend this person or, you know, and so that must have been hard. In most cases, the school systems had never worked with a student with spinal cord injury before. And so, you know, just trying to learn about that student, get to know them,
mm-hmm.
get to know, I mean, the student he or she is still trying to learn what he or she can do. It's probably going to get more strength and function, but so there's a lot of change going on. But then to be that school counselor thinking, well, how can I help, yet I don't know what this is. So I would have liked to have really gotten to spend some time with the school counselors, and because in most cases the school counselors were integral in really making this happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Before we go, I want to ask you about both rehab and school counselors in a minute.
Okay.
But I wanted to stop you, but I didn't.
Okay.
But I just imagine if you're talking to a family member and they're reliving this experience 6 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and they're getting real emotive and affect and really being affected by telling that story. How are you handling it as a researcher? I mean, when you're sitting there listening to that, what's going on with you?
I cheated.
You cheated.
I cheated. I can remember having. I can remember the very first interview, and I just thought I was really touched, and I remember talking to a PhD who I work with in sociology, and I said I cheated She goes, you can't talk, you can't emote, you can't, you know, reflect. I said, I did. Because I was just amazed. I was truly amazed at how important this was to her to be a part of her son's success, if that makes sense.
Okay. And were they happy to be part of the study?
Yeah, definitely. I was surprised. Okay. I had one participant who was kind of funny. He's like, my sister is not going to want to talk to you. I don't think she's going to want to do this. And I kept pestering him. I said, well, can I just call her? And she was she came from out of state to be interviewed. She was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so she was really actually happy to do it.
Wow.
And so I think he was just like kind of downplaying, oh, it's no big deal. I don't think, she, you know. And in reality, she was really, I think I enjoyed speaking with her. I hope she enjoyed the experience because she had some wonderful things to say. But.
All right, back to rehab counselors, because I see, you know, rehab counselors and school counselors were two places where your study might have some impact. And as a rehabilitation counselor, how do you view your role in light of what you found out? What recommendations or thoughts would you have for them?
That's a great question. I thought going into this that I would be able to come out of the dissertation with sort of like a menu or a cookie cut. I mean, I know this sounds terrible, but I thought I would have this wonderful document that I could just give to people and say, here, just follow this and it'll work. That's not the case. I think what I learned was everybody's drastically different. The schools are drastically different in terms of how accessible they are. And what the students said that was most important to them was really listening to them in terms of what they needed and also being willing to revise the plan. So I can remember one young man, he said, you know, I was going to do it. He goes, I might try 100 times and fail, but I needed to do that. And he goes, but then I needed to be able to ask someone, okay, well, plan A didn't work. What's plan B? So I think there is, for lack of a better way to say it, there's no streamlined cookie-cutter approach. I think getting to know the student and taking time to really understand their functional abilities, like what they're able to do in terms of.
But you're also in your answer, you're implying that there's that a requirement for flexibility and a requirement for assisting students in navigating the next possibility. So if possibility A doesn't work, then as a rehab counselor, I need to be thinking of possibility B. And how am I going to move now from possibility A to possibility B? So there's a lack of, you know, you're suggesting a lack of rigidity in the planning and a flexibility in the planning for these patients.
Yeah, and that's, thank you for sharing that or summarizing it that way. Because one of the participants, and I think about every time, you know, his comments, he said that's exactly how it was for him. You know, he had someone who at the school who would check in, hey, we wondered about this. How would you like to handle this? And this was the summer prior to him returning. And so there was some pre-planning. They were asking him, what do you think we should do? And then they were talking to his mom, talking to us, you know, the rehab team. And then also after he resumed school, there was, okay, how is it? What do you think? What else could we do? You know, so there was some follow-along and there's some adjustments, and he wasn't afraid to speak up either, so that was good.
So what about the school counselor's role? You know, the rehab counselor helps with the transition, and the school counselor then tries to help with the reintegration into the school.
Absolutely. I think the nice thing about the school counselor for us as the rehab counselor is there are number one contact, if you will. So when you start to develop the relationship with the school system, I usually look to the school counselor to really be the person I can call on. And, of course, it takes a little time. You know, you have to sort of say, okay, well, this is where they're at. And I can describe someone functionally, but until they get in there and, you know, okay, well, there's a step to, you know, there's some details. There's a lot of details that you sort of have to struggle through. And so I guess I see the school counselor and the rehab counselor kind of working collaboratively for a period of time, probably a couple months. And then you're right, the school counselor can kind of observe the student in their natural environment, whereas I don't have rehab counselor doesn't have that ability.
Okay.
So just kind of seeing, you know, how are the classes going? How's the person's comfort level, fatigue level?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are they doing with their assignments? You know,
and maybe even just knowing the context of the school and the school environment.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't know if rehab counselors would go on site to attempt to do that, or if they're going to rely on sort of the school counselor's ability to kind of navigate the context of the particular individual site.
Right, a little bit of both. I mean,
yeah.
Ideally, if you could sort of have a visit at the school, it's always nice. It gives a person an understanding. They left that school able-bodied, so they're not going to view that school as a person in a chair. They're going to view it as a person
mm-hmm.
who's able-bodied. So when they come back, then they view it as a person
yeah.
you know, who's in a chair.
I guess something that is kind of, you have no data on this, but I think maybe you have some experience on this. What about the population you didn't study? The population that chooses not to try and renegotiate getting back into a school setting.
That's truly who I'm most intrigued about, quite honestly. I mean, I think it was wonderful to meet with these young people and talk about their story and hear what they had, because it's amazing what they've done. But you're right. I think about the student who maybe was not attending prior to their accident or their injury. So we could facilitate getting them re-enrolled, which we try to do. And,
mm-hmm.
and they can get 5 hours of home instruction or tutoring at the hospital. And then it's kind of up to the student and their family, do they want to continue with that home instruction or that, you know, continue with their school experience. So what about that population? You know, that's the population that just I struggle with, because you want to engage them. You want to pull them back in and say, hey, this is good. School's good. But that's a choice.
But I'm wondering if those four factors that you identified in successful reintegration
mm-hmm.
are also areas that we need to look at where we have spinal cord injury patients who choose, for whatever reason, not to go back.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an issue of the relationships? Is there an issue in terms of the family support
mm-hmm.
in those relationships? Is there an issue in terms of their effective response to the injury? And
right.
if these are points of intervention that might make the transition more possible for folks, if we start to organize. It's not that wonderful manual that you wanted to come out of your dissertation.
Right.
It does introduce some things that maybe are areas to look at when
Absolutely.
Folks are in that process of trying to make the decision to reintegrate.
Absolutely. And having done those family member interviews, it helped document the role, if you will, of that family member in helping this student along and through the process. I'm not saying that the student didn't do it themselves. They did. You know, they made a decision. But when it comes to, you know, maybe you transport, there is no transportation to school. Well, if the parents can afford an accessible vehicle, then they take the student to school. And that can be expensive. And so, absolutely. You know, those are the areas you target, and then there's also, I think, a conscious decision at some point. I always go back to that. I think some people will say to me, no, I'm not going, and that's the bottom line, and you try to dissuade them from that. But
that's interesting, because the day we're recording this is the day that we went through your pre-defense, and everything's in line for a successful defense in a couple of weeks. So I guess if you listen to this podcast sometime after October 16th, it'll be Dr. Jacqueline Stanton, or we anticipate it'll be Dr. Jacqueline Stanton.
Yeah, hopefully.
but in the meantime, it's been exciting for me to be a part of watching you do this study and more importantly, hearing you tell the story about the study and about working with acquired spinal cord injury patients.
Hey,
so,
thank you.
Thanks for your time with us today.
Thanks.
You've just heard an interview with Jacqueline Stanton regarding assisting acquired spinal cord injury patients.
Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4015. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.